Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Episode 3 of The Gilded Age. Face the Music is over, but we are just getting started here on post-show recaps. Hi, I'm Jess Sterling, back again to talk more Gilded Age. We've got a wild episode to talk about this week, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Jess, I feel like everything is at stake today. It's basically, we do this podcast and we can get everything, or we do this podcast and then we can lose it all.
I certainly hope that's not the case.
Let's hope not. Well. Not even the podcast. Like, just literally everything. We'll just literally lose everything, depending on this one podcast episode.
The good news is I didn't have, like, the most money in the world to lose, so it doesn't feel like super high pressure for me.
So, like, I feel like that's my biggest thought in all of this. It's like, when you don't have money, then, you know, it doesn't seem like your life is going to get ruined when you lose the $2 in your bank account that you have.
And of course, we couldn't talk about this episode alone. We needed another member to join us. We need to do a lot of charity work. So we need to get the girls together to decide who we're going to talk to, how we're going to fundraise, who we're going to get the money from. So welcome to the podcast, Angela Bloom. Angela, how are you?
Hey, I am ready. I have my bustle on. I have my hat. I'm good to go.
Excellent. Yeah. I was listening to HBO puts out their own Gilded Age podcast, and I was listening to it today. And Cynthia, they do some behind the scenes stuff. So Cynthia Nixon was on the most recent one, and she was talking about how much they had to wear those corsets and how, like, I never thought about it, but apparently they squeeze you so much. You think it would give you better posture when you're sitting, but in fact, it, like, atrophies your muscles because you rely on
them. Wearing it. Yeah. So I went to school for costume design and theater and art history. And, like, that was, like, my area. And I can make you guys a corset, but I was in a music or in a play once, which was like a reimagination of Twelfth Night, and they put us in those corsets, those, like, big, like, full, like, stays that go underneath your clothing. And they do that for, like, television. Like, they make it, like, fully historically accurate. And, like, so, yeah, it probably sucks, especially, like, the long hours filming.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, she said they did get breaks in them. But yeah, I can only imagine. I've only worn a corset once, and it was on my wedding day because that is like a normal thing to do rather than a bra. And let me tell you, my boobs have never looked better. But like also, like, I don't ever want to wear one again.
I'll wear one for like a Renaissance fair, but, you know, better not have that many boning pieces.
Yeah.
Was your corset with like strings, Jess?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I didn't do that for my wedding day. I had like a small one just because I was like a, it ended at my rib cage, but it was like eye hooks in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. It was a big thing. I mean, I really liked it. I liked it like what it did for me, but I didn't like it in terms of comfortability, for sure over long periods of time.
Yeah. I get that.
I feel like I wouldn't want to undo it for breaks because then you just have to get it back in. It's like if I'm in it, then I'm going to stay in it. Like I don't want to have the whole process over again.
Yeah, that's fair. But Angela,
hopefully everyone loves this corset talk.
Well, they better. They better.
You know what? I think that they're here for exactly that. I think that is the target audience of the Gilded Age podcast here on Post Show Recaps.
Yes. But Angela, tell us about your thoughts on the Gilded Age so far. I know you were were you a big Downton Abbey fan when it was on? I'm pretty sure you were.
Do you have to ask? But yes, I was. I'm like an avid fan of this type of show, which is like a Pride and Prejudice, like I would say the Regency era, like a Bridgerton is like I'm obsessed with, have always been obsessed with because of Jane Austen and all of that. But Downton Abbey was like right up that alley of like the upstairs, downstairs, like dramas that are not important. And also from a costumer perspective, like I love that shit. So give me some beautiful garments, give me some people with a ton of money and very little to worry about, and give me their problems and I'm happy. So the Gilded Age has been interesting. I mean, I agree with you guys that the premiere was obviously a bit of a slow start, bit of a Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring type of scene setting. And it was hard to kind of figure out who was who and what that was. But the second episode I loved, and then this one was insane. So I'm hoping that it continues down that track of just kind of like catching me by surprise.
Yeah, things are definitely heating up here in the third episode. We have a massive ending to the episode.
Yeah, that killed me. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so if you have somehow stumbled upon this this podcast and you have not watched episode 3 of The Gilded Age, please quickly step out of here before we majorly spoil you on something that happens in the episode. Yeah. And while you're at it, I'll take a chance to plug this feed here. We do have our own feed now. You can still find us at posherrecaps.com/HBO pod, but you will also be able to find us posherrecaps.com/gildedagefeed is where you can subscribe to us, give us some reviews, give us some ratings. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. But now we're going to talk about the episode now. So please step out in about 3, 2, 1. I'm going to spoil you big time on what happens. This, the ending. Oh my gosh, Mr. Morris just
caught me by surprise. I was like, you know what? I did sense that something was coming with him because like clearly this was affecting him in a way that like the Russells didn't get, like they didn't notice. Like, I think that, I mean, it makes me kind of hate the Russells now a little bit that they're like so like cold and tactical, but I don't think that they expected this to happen. I think that for him, it was George Russell was just kind of like, no, this is business. This is like what you, you know, what you need to do to like get your shit together. And for this guy, he's old money, though. Like, his money is everything, and he's just lost it all.
So Mr. Morris takes his own life at the end of this episode, and I think the moment I sensed it coming, Sarah, was when he gets home, he's talking to his wife, and he's saying, you're so beautiful, our children are so beautiful, I'm so proud
of them. Yeah, are
they going to
be home tonight? Like,
very much feels like something you say when either, like, you know it's coming, your life is coming to an end, or, you know, kind of like your last words,
almost
like a note.
Or you got some bad news, and you've been diagnosed with cancer, and you know you have only, like, a month to live, like, you've resigned yourself to that fact, but... I don't know. I don't agree with what he did, but it definitely hit me hard from like a viewer perspective. I was like, oof, that sucks.
Yeah. For me, it was the desperation when he was in Russell's office. He was literally on his hands and knees begging and pleading and kneeling to please show him some leniency and like leniency and please, like, you know, let us, like, let this stop, make this stop, like. And he says, like, we're fools and we'll do whatever you need. Like, just please do the decent thing.
Yeah.
And like seeing a grown man beg like that to another grown man.
Yeah.
And Mr. Russell's response was like,
too little, no. Too late.
Yeah. Too little. Yeah. Yeah.
I also don't know why he did that, because like, how does George move on now? You know what I mean?
I think the way they framed it earlier in the episode was that Bertha was like, listen, you made a fortune once, you'll do it again. But they also kind of interspersed with this scene, intercut with this scene, we see the Russells talking and George Russell being like, you know, I think they've had enough now. I think they've suffered enough.
Yeah.
I'll pull back. Well, too little, too late, as we know, based on what Mr. Morris does. He doesn't believe there's going to be any resolution for him. I did a little, like a tiny bit of research. I apologize. Like, I'm not a historian, so I don't always know everything that is going on for this time
this
period.
This is also a weird era. This is a weird era. It's not, it lasts a really short time. You know?
Yeah. And so basically what I read was that if this were to happen to you, like something like what happens to Mr. Morris and the other alderman, is like, if you lose your fortune, there's nothing you can do. Like, you will be shunned. There's basically nothing to save you from that. Maybe they could marry off their children into wealth, but they still have this stain on them. And so Mr. Morris's thought of like the only way out is to take his own life, which honestly, like, is both selfish and selfless, because he's taking himself out of this situation, but this stain will still be on his family.
Suicide, and then another stain will be there because he killed himself.
Exactly. You know? So like, there's this whole pall that will be cast across their family as a result. People will treat them differently. They won't be included anymore. And so Mrs. Morris is really going to be stuck in a position where I'm very interested more than ever to see, Sarah, where Mrs. Morris goes from here, because I didn't really care about her for a long time, but now I want to know more.
She kind of sucks.
Well, yeah. I mean, I still don't really care about her, but to be quite frank, but I think that it's going to be interesting. Like, how is she going to bounce back? She's now going to be a widow Angela's right. Like, now she's going to have the stain that, you know, her husband took his own life, and it's kind of going to be interesting. After all that happened.
And I do think that there is an earlier scene in the episode where he's blaming her for everything. So now she also has that in her conscience of like
guilt.
My husband just killed himself, and like, it's my fault, maybe. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, because she couldn't get Mrs. Russell to pull back. Like, she couldn't convince her to pull back.
Right.
But he said, you need to go get her to change her mind. And it's like, they have nothing to do with it. Like, Mr. Morris, like, really fucked up here.
Pardon me. Yeah, but Mr. Morris blamed his wife. Like, you shouldn't have been mean to Mrs. Russell. Mm-hmm. And then George said the same thing to Mr. Morris. Like, if only your wife showed my wife, you know,
some respect,
like, you snubbed and belittled her. So, I mean, is it really on Mrs. Morris? No, but also this is the repercussions when like people are so set in their ways where they, you know, like, she's going to have to feel some responsibility,
of course,
for all of the things that are happening, because and also like there's a little bit of like he said she said between like Aurora and Mrs. Morris. Oh, Mrs. Morris said it was Aurora's fault. Aurora said it was Mrs. Morris's fault, because you know, to be honest with you, it's society's fault and old money's fault, because they won't and cannot accept these people into their lives.
There's also some historical context here as well, which, you know, I figure that's why you brought me on, right? The Gilded Age, like, kind of the real Gilded Age is sort of like ended by what this thing called the Panic of 1893, which was basically this economic crisis of the collapse of the Philadelphia and Reading Railroad and the National Cordage Company, which were like huge collapses in businesses that led to like 20 to 25% of unemployment rates. And then I guess at the same time, a bunch of people killed themselves. So like, this was like what was happening in the, at the time. And so they're trying to like bring this, like, I guess like idea of mental health to our screens. But I don't know, in my opinion, I didn't hate it, but I also was signing up for a little bit more of society escapism. Gotcha. So I was a little like, this is like, this sucks.
It got dark, surprisingly. It got dark. I mean, I think that Jessica and I have shared the notion that like our favorite moments in the Gilded Age is when it's, I guess, more like fluffier and like, you know, we're all for the drama between the wives.
Yeah.
We love that.
That is fluffy. I will say that's like on the fluffy end for me. But like, also, I will be honest with you. I'm not an economics major. I don't care.
Well, that's so sad. That is something that I do want to get into here. And we might as well like kind of start from the top, because I had to do some research into like all the stocks stuff. And that is something that like, to me, I don't know if I am in the minority of the viewership of the audience in that I don't know a lot of this stuff. And I felt like that is a weak point of this episode. The fact that I had to do research outside of the episode to actually understand what was going on, to me feels like a little bit of a weak point, but we'll get into it. Let's take a quick ad break here just so we don't have to, we could go straight on through the whole episode. So we will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, we're back. So let's get into it. So we start off with them talking about Clara Barton. So this is Marion talking to Agnes and Ada. She is like the head of the Red Cross. This is the very beginning of the Red Cross. They need funding. She's a real person. Yes. Yeah. Pulling from real history here. It's kind of nice to get like a mix of some real history mixed into this. And so Ada and Marion are both going to go hear Miss Barton speak. Because she's going to basically be speaking to all of the like wives that have all this money in order to get some fundraising.
Seems like a standard thing that happens here on the Gilded Age.
Yeah. All these like wives with the fundraising, it's like, geez Louise, like they really are busy.
That's all they do. I mean, it reminds me of like Emily Gilmore. Like that's her life is just like constant charity events. And like,
currently doing a rewatch of Gilmore Girls.
Are you?
100%. It reminds me of her. Yeah. So then they, of course, are looking outside and they start gossiping all about Gladys, who is Gladys Russell, Mrs. Russell's daughter. And they basically say like she's basically held captive. And Agnes, having never met formally any of the Russells, immediately knows, because she's of old money. She knows how it works. Sarah, she's like, oh, yeah, the reason that Gladys hasn't been like come out yet to society is because Mrs. Russell knows she can't fill that ballroom with people at this point.
Yeah. And I think they said that previously, too.
Yeah. They're not in the position socially to have Gladys go out yet. They know there's like a lot of strategic planning into this. If they do it too early, then she's not going to marry a good enough prospect in their minds. If they wait a little, then they think that maybe they could build some like social capital in New York City. The issue is that even though Gladys is what, like 18, 17. She's
I think she's around that age, yeah.
Already of marrying age. And pretty soon she's going to become old news because, I don't know, that's how...
Spinster.
Yeah, she'll be a spinster.
Which is like, I mean, it's just like all the pressure that you put on young women to get married early, like especially... Especially back then, but even though how it carries into now, like
we still do this. Like I got married at 26, maybe, and it was like quite young, but people were like already married at 23.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And like, I mean, I remember thinking in my early 20s, like if I'm not married by like the time I'm 30, like what's even the point? Like it's going to be like horribly embarrassing. And it's just like, it's very interesting how like this is ingrained into women from a very young age for many centuries over time. And yeah, like Gladys is like a young peach into the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if they don't get like a move on, like she's a
she needs
woman.
To get married. She needs to start popping out little Russells, you know, colon, whatever her new name is. Like she otherwise her, you know, what is she gonna do? And she's
what
also
is her
their
worth?
Only they have one daughter and one son, which I don't know if that's common for the time period for somebody at that level of wealth to only have two children.
That I'm not sure of. Yeah, because like I feel like looking at Downton Abbey, which obviously it's set in England, but still they had like four, you know, they are three girls, you know, they had three kids. So who I'm not sure. I feel like at this point you'd still want to have a lot of kids just to be able to have more
have
children to marry off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like truthfully, truthfully, I can't handle any more characters in this show. So I'm very grateful that there's only two children.
Yes. Yes. So
any more actors out there that need a job?
It's too many people. So Gladys is talking to Miss Grant about Archie Baldwin, who apparently lives on 35th Street. He has a good family.
Yeah, we haven't seen him, right?
We have not. But it seems like this is they're setting him up to be someone that Gladys is very interested in. But potentially there's going to be issues between Mrs. Russell accepting Archie and not thinking he's good enough for her. And so we see Jack. So then we're off to the Van Ryn downstairs. And young footman Jack asks out the kitchen maid Bridget. So they're going to have like a very minor plot line this episode where they're going out on a date. She like does not seem very into it.
She seems like she has some issues around like people touching her, like PDA. Like, I wonder if there's like a backstory there where we're going to find out somebody like abused her or she was like sexually assaulted or something.
Yeah.
Because like the way they were setting it up was like he kept trying to hug her, put his arm around her. And then he was like, oh, can we hold hands? She was like, I told you, I don't like that stuff. Like, don't touch me, which was like a little like, okay, like there's, you know, which I like that she's like being, you know, her opinions. But yeah, I have a feeling there's more to that that they're going to try to put in. Another story for us to follow.
Yeah. So this is like kind of gives the downstairs Van Ryn of the Van Ryns like a little bit to do. We get to see them go on their date. Still very minor overall, but it's nice to kind of start learning their names. It's been very difficult for me with the downstairs of both households to know who they are because I think we're focusing a lot more on the upstairs with the exception of probably Peggy. So even though I guess she's technically downstairs.
I like refuse to consider Peggy she's downstairs.
I know she's like technically is though, even though like I agree with you. She is like of
like
a higher status.
Yeah,
she's a middle. Let's call her a middle. So over at the Russells, this is when we first hear news that there's a rumor in the paper that this law that is very important to George Russell's business, the law to get a station for the railroad in New York, New York City, it's going to be rescinded. And
this is after he spoke to the Morris and the other aldermans last episode and convinced them to buy all the stock now so that when the law passes, they get rich.
Right. So that was like a bit of insider trading. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, well, I wasn't expecting it, but it doesn't surprise me. So I did some research into this to understand exactly what is going on.
Do tell.
It's called selling short, apparently. So this is a thing. So they will make money. So all the aldermen have bought this stock when it's low, knowing that when the bill passes, when the law passes, that stock will skyrocket and they will become rich. However, they are trying to then switch things around on George Russell. And so they have now borrowed shares from George's company through a lender that does this for a living. and they're going to sell those shares, have a pile of cash, wait for the shares to go back down, which will happen when they rescind the law. And then they will repurchase them and get back a ton of money. And so if everything works out for the aldermen, they will make tons and tons of money while at the same time tanking George Russell's company and causing him to lose a ton of money. And then potentially one step further, which is what George postulates, is that they could then pass the law again and again have those stocks skyrocket and make a ton of money. So they're the ones with the power currently. But they underestimate George Russell, Sarah. They don't know the lengths he's willing to go to make them lose money.
So the difference between them and George Russell is that George Russell is open to taking risks. He sees that if he doesn't come from money, so if he loses the money, what's the difference to him? Like, and he talks to Bertha, and it's like, you know, if we lose our fortune, we'll just do it again. We'll gain our fortune and then we'll probably lose it again. But like, because he did not grow up with money, the stakes are not as high as him as somebody like the Morrises or all of these old money families, because they are so reliant on money because that's all they've ever known. They don't know a life otherwise. Right. So the difference between Russell is that like big risk, big reward. He's willing to put in the risk.
Right. And they're a bit like more chaotic than the old money is. They're willing to take risks. And especially, I think the most interesting relationship in this show so far is the relationship between George and Bertha Russell, because they like get off on this, right?
Oh,
like
they're
very passionate about each other, which I feel like isn't as common back in the day, right? You married more for money than you did for happiness a lot of the time in these wealthy families. And they get off on the idea that she says to him, like, I'm okay with you risking it. And the fact that she even has a say is also a big deal, considering the wives are usually the ones taking the orders in these types of families.
They're a power couple. Yeah. And they, I really enjoy their dynamic, because they're kind of like,
they're not the ideal power couple, but
these are no Obamas. Okay. No.
Yeah. They're like evil as heck.
Yeah. They're what is the D&D like style that they are? They're like
chaotic evil.
I think they're like lawful evil, because they have like rules and they have like
fair lawful evil. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I'm kind of at the point where then like the last episode, I was like, I don't know. Like, they're okay. Now I'm kind of like at the position where it's like, they're so bad that like, I'm enjoying them. Like, I'm like,
I felt that way until Mr. Morris shot himself in the head. True. I was like, oh, this is great. I was like, this is spicy. This is like a scandalous situation. And then all of a sudden, bang.
But up until that part, I was like, you know what, let's just burn this whole thing to the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm coming down with you. Like, let's, like, you know, at this point it's like I'm rooting for these like awful,
everybody's awful, right?
Yes, nobody's good. That's true. And Ada, to be honest, Ada is just like we'll get into that.
Yeah.
For Ada.
So then we see the business meeting between George Russell and Mr. Morris, where basically Russell's like, I know what you're doing. And they have a big argument. And so that's the end of that whole situation. Meanwhile, we see the Clara Barton speech, where she's head of the Red Cross. And we get the introduction of the character Cornelius Eckhart III. So he immediately comes up to Ada and Marion. And we find out that back when Ada and Agnes lived in Pennsylvania, they knew each other. They both lived in Pennsylvania when they were kids. And he said he settled in Connecticut. Now he has nothing tying him there, so he's back to New York. Mrs. Morris is his niece. And he found out Ada was going to be at this meeting, and he wanted to, quote unquote, revive their friendship. Mm-hmm. Marion is like very pro this, which immediately set off my like, antenna, you know.
Mm-hmm. Marion is like, just I like Marion a lot, but I think that she has some challenges ahead of her, because she really is trying to do the right thing by her family, and then also like has these ideas and these modern sensibilities. She's very like Sybil from Downton Abbey, like,
yeah,
is gonna make a mistake, is, you know, her family will support her in the end. Like, I see it all coming, but she, I think, really just wants the best for Ada. And that's really hard because she's not seeing the big picture that Agnes sees. You know, she's not like knowing, you know, like that this is what this guy is doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everybody in New York City, all of these people have ulterior motives. Nothing is as black and white as this is an old friend that always had affection for Ada and wants to rekindle a relationship.
Everybody, and who plays this guy, by the way? Is this what's his face?
He looked familiar. Hold on, let me look him up.
Bill Irwin.
Was he in The Grinch?
You know what, he might have been. I love how the
Did
Grinch
he play the
comes
dad
up.
In The Grinch?
He has an extensive IMDb.
I need to know now.
He played the ER doctor in This Is Us.
I don't watch This Is Us. It was like I couldn't get on board with
you
it.
You shouldn't. Just don't do it. It's not worth it.
Bill Irwin as Lulu Who.
Oh my God, more characters from The Grinch on the show.
That's hilarious.
It's the who's who of Whoville.
Yeah. I mean, it is. There's a huge cast, but yeah, Christine Baranski.
Yeah, so latest, it's
yeah, it is like a mistress.
It's sad because Marion, like, she's very innocent and naive in that she is not used to these people being so manipulative. Yeah. And so she has no idea. And Ada, of course, I think Ada's very flattered and like, I think she's smarter than she lets on a lot of the time.
I feel like she's dumber than she lets on. I thought that she was smarter last episode. And now I'm like, no, this girl's a little daft.
Well, she at least knows more about high society than Marion does, right? Like, she has those smarts there. Like, we get into this whole thing where Marion is like, oh, well, you should, like, pay us a visit. Like, you should call, whatever, whatever. And then Marion gets in trouble immediately because she's like, why don't you – this is every single episode. Marion's – let's count how many times Marion can suggest that they ask Mrs. Russell for her money.
Yeah, that's, episode. Like, the drinking game, isn't it? She's like, you know what? Like, what about – like, why don't we just, like, ask Mrs. Russell or –
yeah.
Or Mrs. Chamberlain. It's like, no, how dare you neither bring up Mrs. Chamberlain? And then we find out why we don't like Mrs. Chamberlain, and it's a bunch of bullshit.
It is a bunch of bullshit. Yeah. I was so upset when I found out the reason for it.
So the situation is that Mrs. Chamberlain and her husband had sex prior to getting married, and she became pregnant.
Right.
And so the son that they adopt is a son that they had already. So it is their child.
Yeah.
It's their child that they had out of wedlock, but in order for that to be like acceptable, they pretend to adopt him.
Right.
I can't tell you how disappointed I am.
You thought it was something so much spicier, right?
Yeah. And she wears this like black plume, like she's like evil, like
no, yeah, she had a child with her kid before they got married.
I was devastated that it wasn't.
And her husband's like, her husband's not even around anymore. That's like, it's old news. It's
yeah. Who cares?
Oh, like old
and then I think
news,
what was
like,
it? Ada who's just like, well, people have long memories.
This
or whatever.
Is bullshit. I wanted Mrs. Chamberlain to be a murderess. Like, I wanted her to like be a husband kidder, like a black widow. It's like, no, you just had a baby with your husband. Like, mm-hmm. This is. I am so mad that this is why we don't like Mrs. Chamberlain.
I know. Oh. So, yeah, very upsetting because we all thought it was something spicier. But I guess this was spicy for the 1880s. Meanwhile, back at the Van Rynes, Agnes is talking about Eckhart and saying he has no money and no prospects. And Marion is like, well, it's all about Ada. Like, he just wants to talk to Ada. And Agnes can be very, like, blunt and hurtful because she's like, no. And Ada's like, is that so hard to believe? Like, that was hurtful.
Yes. And I don't think that it's hard to believe. Ada has such a sweet personality. She's such a genuinely nice person. It's not hard to believe that somebody, and this is why Marion takes it at face value, that somebody from her past would want to rekindle something. You know, maybe they went their separate ways. They had, you know, a different life, but they're coming back together and, you know, they'll have their golden years and they'll travel or whatever. But the fact that he doesn't have any prospects, and that then you get the clincher from Agnes that she overheard him before he proposed to Ada saying that this was a meal ticket. So he's not a good person.
No. And that's the thing is, I think that's what's nice about having Agnes around is like she knows these things. And I love that we do get a softer side to Agnes this episode in that we realize she's doing everything to protect her sister. Like she doesn't want her sister to even know this information. Mm-hmm. She'll just do what she has to do. She will be the bad guy, quote unquote, to like help her sister. But we find out Oscar is going to be dining with none other than Larry Russell. And I love Agnes. When you say those words, you stab me in the side. And Oscar is immediately so quick with, well, lucky you have the skin of a rhinoceros.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite like quippy line of the episode. I thought yeah. it was great as well.
Yeah. yeah. No, and I will say that this guy, Bill Irwin, kind of does look a little weird too. There are people in the show that are their age shows in the makeup that they're wearing. So yeah. I don't know. It's all pretty
I love
funny,
his
though.
Mustache. I think it's a great mustache.
Yeah. You know who George looks like is I was trying to place this like for three episodes, but he kind of looks like Oscar Isaac from Star Wars, from Dune.
He does. Yes.
Yeah. Like, totally. Like they could be twins.
They do.
I mean,
a lot
Oscar Isaac is like a wider face, but like especially in Dune, if you look at pictures of him, he has that beard. Mm-hmm. That's probably why.
They do
it,
look
but...
a lot alike. So
also where was sorry, I keep interrupting. That's okay. I'm pumped. Why does where was Larry this episode?
Larry, we only saw Larry at the dinner. That was the only time
we
saw
more
him.
Larry. Like Larry's not doing enough work to like
to
you
get
know,
Marion.
Yeah, I need him to work harder in the love triangle, especially because Mr. Rikes is like climbing up the ladder in Marion's affections. And I don't like, I mean, it's okay, but like Larry is a good catch for Marion and he's not working hard enough.
Yeah, I think that like I love Larry. I wish we got more of him this episode, but we will at least see him at the dinner. But speaking of the Russells, we get more. I honestly don't care about this maid who has the hots for George.
I can't even remember her name. I try.
I because
really,
it doesn't
really
matter.
No, it doesn't matter. I can't tell if he had. I think you guys mentioned in the last episode, the last podcast, that like there was like a slight flirtation between them, but I didn't even see that. Like, I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares either. Like, when you have a choice between Bertha and this lady, like, come on now. It's obvious it's gonna be Bertha.
She's gonna get herself in trouble and then like immediately be off the show. Like, I think that she's gonna flame out quickly. Like, there's gonna be a scandal where she tries to like misreads a signal, tries to get with George, yeah. and she's fired or something. You know,
I could see that happening.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
So Gladys has asked her dad for a favor. Like, she wants to have a conversation about Archie Baldwin. And she wants to have him for dinner. And so this is what she brings up at dinner in front of Mrs. Russell, who's like, isn't he a little bit young for you? Which I don't think we know how old he is. So tough to say. But Gladys wants to have him over for dinner, and Oscar immediately, which is very interesting, asks George about the railroad. And like, this is when Bertha immediately pivots. Like, she is so quick to pivot away from that conversation because this is in the midst of all this drama happening with the railroad. And then we see Oscar asking a direct question at Gladys, which seems a bit different. Like, it seems like it's something he shouldn't be doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, super awkward, because I feel like that he, I mean, we see later with him in his room talking about in his room in his like love den with his lover yeah. talking about the whole situation, and I think for him he's just, it's all so strategic and methodical,
yeah.
Like, there's like step one, meet her at a party. Step two, be invited to dinner. At dinner, step three, engage with her directly. But yeah, it does seem like he was not supposed to do that. But I think he's more trying to impress her than he's trying to impress her parents. Because
100%. Yeah.
And I think in this scenario, that is the way to go, because I think Gladys is going to be the one that says, no, daddy, mommy, like, this is who I love. Like, I'm marrying them and I don't care who knows it. Like, and they're going to be like, all right.
Yeah, I think he's doing an interesting job of like pursuing Gladys because I don't know, Sarah, you tell me your thoughts. Like, it doesn't seem super overt. Like, I feel like he is kind of taking his time with it versus like, we'll get into Mr. Rakes later, but like versus a, that approach, this is more subtle.
Yes, very much so.
Oscar is Agnes's son. There is nothing that Oscar doesn't do that is extremely strategic and tactical. He knows
his place.
He knows like society standards, and he knows like Gladys. He said it later on, I predicted this. Gladys is the perfect person for Oscar to wed for the reasons that he. She's young. She's impressionable. She's nice. Mm-hmm. She's not going to question anything. She is naive. So
I do like that he said at the end, like, oh, and she's actually nice. Like, I think we'd have a really good time, like, being married. Like, we'd be BFFs.
Exactly. So I think that, like, he definitely knows. And also, technically, she's not out. So that's – there's nothing – like, he can't be overly over with her, can he? Because – she's like in a way not like announced to society. Like, he can do whatever he could, whatever he can to court her, but he it's not like he can like go visit her exclusively for the purpose of like courting, or like he can't like go and dance with her in the middle of a ball. And also, I don't know, like, how he's going to break it to his mom that, like, Gladys is the person that he's going to want to marry.
Well, who knows? Because it seems like he's putting a bit of a halt on that currently anyway.
But I also do think that he is the man of the family. Like, everything is going to go to him. I think that if he wants to marry somebody, there's not much Agnes can do other than, like, ostracize him personally.
Right.
Like, she can't stop him. He's the man, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. So meanwhile, back at the Van Rynes, Mr. Rakes has sent a letter to Marion. And so he's moved to New York and he wants to see her. And Agnes is very against this. She's like, don't seek him out. He's unsuitable. Like, you can't be seen together. And Marion is like, obviously Marion is someone who we're supposed to root for, very obviously, right? Like, she is
blonde. She does have blue eyes. She wears blue all the time. Exactly. Yellow. Like, these are happy colors.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Angelic Marion. She says she'd be lucky to be in his company. And Agnes is just like, oh, Henry, why do you do this to me from the grave?
Yeah, she's like, why is your child just like you?
Yeah. Oh my God. That was my other favorite line.
So do we think Agnes is correct? Do we think that he is a quote unquote adventurer, as Agnes questions?
I think that he might be that, but that it's not something that he's intentionally doing, you know. He like might. An adventurer to her is just somebody who is not from old money and is like a ladder climber and like wants to make their way in the world. And like, well, who's to say that Marion wouldn't live a very happy life with this lawyer? Like, lawyer is not a he's not a street urchin. He's not selling apples on the street. Like, he makes money. He just got a new job in New York City. Like, he has a career, you know, so she would live a humble life. She wouldn't be living in, you know, up on Fifth Avenue. But I don't know. I think
not
that
good
like
enough, right. That's not good enough.
Mm-hmm. I think that they just have different ideas of what the term adventurer means as far as an option to marry. I think Marion would be fine marrying that.
What constitutes an adventurer?
I feel like it's like she's saying like he doesn't want to settle down. Like, he's moved to New York for the sense of adventure. Not
I feel like that's the
serious.
Opposite of what Mr. Rakes wants.
Yeah, of course it is. But Agnes has like met the guy one time. Like, she doesn't really know him. Yeah. But I still, because of her, like what she knows about Mr. Eckhart, I also tend to like believe that she knows more than about what's going on in certain circumstances.
Or at least she thinks she does. Like, she's a little jaded to somebody wanting to marry into their family because maybe they're just doing it for the money, you know.
True. Yeah. So I guess time will tell. We'll find out. But Marion is like upset about this whole situation. And then we also see Bertha and George, speaking of marrying off, Bertha and George are having a conversation about the potential for Archie for Gladys. Mm-hmm. And Bertha obviously has spotted that Oscar is into Gladys.
Yeah.
But George doesn't trust him, rightfully so. I don't think you should. But
do you think George knows that he's gay? Or like senses it? Maybe?
I don't think so. No. I don't. I think he thinks that he's manipulative and wants their money.
Yeah.
You know. But Bertha's like, don't worry. Like if Archie isn't right, you know, I get the choice. She basically is like, I'll take care of it. You know, don't worry about it.
And it's kind of a throughout the episode, we hear Bertha and George talking about how George feels like Bertha has too close of a grasp on her Gladys, and that he thinks like it's inappropriate for her to have a governess at this age. Like she should be, you know, she should be out by now. Like, how is she going to find a respectful marriage if she doesn't? She doesn't like go out and see people. Like right now, I mean, the only people going after her are like really random because she's not out.
Yeah. I agree with that. Like, why she shouldn't have like a babysitter or a nanny. It's like kind of inappropriate.
Yeah. Even like her nanny says that.
let Gladys live. It's bad enough she had her name is Gladys. Like, let her live.
Truly.
So then we get them talking about the potential to like make another fortune together. Bertha's like, go for it. Mm-hmm. We'll figure it out. And then he asks to stay with her because remember, this is in the 1880s. The husband and wife didn't sleep in the same room. So he asked to stay with her and she's like,
those were the days, huh?
Yeah.
He has like this bedroom. Whole beautiful bedroom and like and then like he has to like ask permission to like hang out with her. It's like nights I have a headache or I don't want to be like, don't come near me. It's like, go to our separate rooms.
Yeah. And she says, you only have to ask. And then they like full on just like making out, having a good time.
I can't believe we haven't talked about this yet. Her like the blatant nipple shots that were going on in this episode.
So you know what? I was like, for a second, I thought they were bows. And
so much areola.
I know. I thought they were bows. And then I was like, oh, that's Carrie Coon's nipples, like full on nipples.
I was fine with it, but I was surprised because I think it was like, is this an HBO thing? Like, we need to show a little skin. Like, we need to make it a little spicy.
HBO loves showing boobs.
Man, I miss the nips.
You miss the nips? They were, like, real out.
Okay,
like,
let's be honest with you. Like, if we're in the pink bedroom, do you think I'm looking at boobs? No, I'm looking at the pink bedroom.
No, I just noticed it because she took off her robe. So it was like it directed your eye to her.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I was like looking at her chest the whole time.
No, it was less so like you looking at her chest and more so like I'm obsessed with her pink bedroom.
I mean, same.
Yeah. So then we go to Oscar's love palace with him and John Adams. And he notices that Oscar is preoccupied. And this is when we have that whole conversation about Oscar saying he's found the perfect girl to marry. It does seem like John, he's not pleased about this, but like they don't really have a choice in this day and age. They can't be out together. Yeah. He's always going to have to be in secret. If him and Oscar want to stay together, this is their best bet at doing that. Is to sneak it underneath Oscar's prospective wife.
Well, I think, and that's what Oscar believes 100% is that nothing will change, which is like a completely naive view because once he gets married, he can't sleep in this like in this weird studio with this guy every night. Like, and he also, you know, it's not going to be the same. So I think that John is a little bit more, you know, a little bit more savvy to the situation and that. You know, it won't be the same. And he was kind of hoping, I think, that they would just cross that bridge, maybe not at the moment, maybe a little later. Maybe they, you know, they don't have to do it right now. And he's like, I don't love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sucks. Like, obviously, Oscar's not exactly like a rootable character, but it does stink for John. You know, like we don't know John super well, but it's unfortunate that this is going to be how it has to be back then. And then we're back in Mr. Russell's office. So they have fully rescinded the law. So there's not going to be any railroad station in New York City. And
big mistake.
Well, George's solution is buy every single stock that comes up on the market, hide the purchases. I don't want them traced back to me. And I love – okay, so Sarah, I think this is why we enjoy the Russells is because he has this like bravado and this like confidence.
And it's not unearned.
No, like where he's just like, I know this is a battle I can win, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like he has so much confidence that like I'm believing his own story. Like, yeah, like you can do this. Like you can conquer them. So I kind of like am following like what they're dropping. I'm feeling it. And also I don't like these games. I think it's not cool. So it's like, yeah, like if they're gonna like screw you over, then yeah, go ahead, screw them over. Mm-hmm. And he compares himself to Washington at the Battle of Yorktown. He's
really feeling himself.
I was gonna say he really thinks a lot of himself.
He does, but he has the confidence of Washington. He says Washington felt good about the Battle of Yorktown because he knew that he could win, and he knows that he can win this as well. So I'm like, okay, George Russell, if you think that you're Washington, then go ahead. Go play with your trains and your
stocks. He puts a lot on the line, though. Like, they even say, like, yeah. I forget. Who's the guy that Morris is talking to the most? Like, I don't think we know who that is.
Mr. Fain or Mr. Rain.
Yeah, just like some other alderman, I guess. But
he's another alderman, yeah.
And I think he's the guy that came up with this idea. Like, he seems like he's the one that is telling Morris that, like, just stay still, you know, hold out. Right. It's going to, like, economically speaking, like, he can't last forever.
He can only last like another day before he runs out.
Yeah, before he runs out of money. And then he's like up a creek, you know? So,
yeah.
It's kind of sad that like Morris couldn't see that, because we don't know yet if that's what's happening. Like, we're not sure what's going to happen. So,
yeah, we leave off on a bit of a cliffhanger kind of in that regard. But Marion and Peggy decide they're going to go see Mr. Rakes. So he invites Marion into his office without mm-hmm. Peggy, which is like, you know,
first I was like, excuse me.
Yeah, so Marion is like, this is inappropriate, you know, like, you know, she shouldn't be doing this. And so he's like, well, I can't call you. How about lunch? She says no. How about coffee in a hotel? She's like, we cannot go into a hotel together.
Yeah, no, we can't. But I will say that, like, the way that we're thinking about it is probably not accurate for the time period where there was, like, the Ritz with, like, the tea room and, like, all of that. Like, it was, like, where you went for tea. Yeah,
but she basically can't be in public with him. And so he's then, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to go to Madison Square. That's where the Statue of Liberty's hand is. Meet me there on Monday at 5 and we'll bump into each other.
This was fascinating. I was like, what do you mean Statue of Liberty's hand?
This is real. Yeah, this is real. A thing.
Yeah, they sent it ahead of the Statue of Liberty before they attached it to the statue to raise funds, because America was like, we don't fucking want this thing. We were like, this gift from France is stupid. Like,
so we needed that. They needed to raise the money in order to build like the structure to hold mm-hmm. it basically.
I just thought that, so like they just placed it in Madison Square Park and they're like, come and view it.
Well, no, you could pay money to go like in it.
Interesting.
And so that is how they were raising money.
Let's be honest. What else was there to do during this time period? We saw Bethesda. What, the Bethesda fountain last time? I mean, it was just people walking around a fountain.
Yeah.
That's where me and Mike had our engagement photos in Central Park, and we have like a ton near the fountain. But I mean, that's what would they do today? You just walk around the fountain.
Well, I guess they get engaged or take engagement photos.
Yeah, always there. So we do hear, because we still don't know what Peggy's secrets are, but we do hear him say, Mr. Rakes say he can confirm her suspicions, and then the door is closed. Yeah. That's all we know.
So frustrating.
We want to know what's going on with Peggy so bad.
Peggy, tell us everything about you. We just want to know.
We got more this episode, I will say.
A little bit more.
With their meeting.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
And so of course then we get the you were mentioning, Angela, the conversation between Mr. Morris and this, I think it's Mr. Rain. Fain. I'm sorry, it's Fain is his name. And they're Charles arguing Fain, about right? That's it. About how long Mr. Russell can delay the fall of his company. Mm-hmm. And so that meeting all happens. As Mr. Russell is leaving, he bumps into Oscar, and this is when Oscar finds out George Russell is doomed. He's gonna lose all his money.
This is the funniest thing.
It was so stupid because Mr. Morris is like having a literal panic attack, and Oscar's like, "Yeah, well, come see, come saw," you know, like,
yeah, life goes on, things come and go. And then he goes to his lover and has a full on episode. Like, my plan is ruined.
Yeah,
everything. He's like full on despair. Like, everything is terrible.
Yeah,
a girl is not my going to be the perfect girl anymore. And it's like, what is his lover supposed to do? Be like, I'm sorry, you can't marry this girl. Like,
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for
this guy.
You.
John is like really, he's having the worst time. Like,
yeah, he's not having a great day.
Oscar. Like, honestly, he should just part ways.
Yeah, he should.
Yeah. John could probably do better than Oscar.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree, but also I'm not into his thing, his whole vibe. Not for me.
The smarmy vibe. So exactly. We see Peggy reading a letter. We find out it's from the publisher of the Christian Advocate. He wants to meet about publishing her short stories. And then the other aspect of this Van Ryn downstairs is Jack and Bridget going to the Magic Lantern show.
Yeah.
They got permission to go from Mr. Bannister.
And yeah, they got time off approval.
Yes. Meanwhile, we have the group of the luncheon. This is the luncheon with the ladies talking about the new opera house and how dare J.P. Morgan, the Rockefellers and the Vanderbilts want a second opera house. But Marianne's like, well, why? It's going to be great. There's more room. Poor innocent Marianne.
Yeah.
So sad. And this is when I started to get extra suspicious of Mr. Eckhart, because he's asking Ada so many questions about like where they live and all the houses moving north.
Can I come call? Can I come call? He just keeps like pushing that he wants to come call on her. And Marion's like, yes, like, he should come call on us. Like, it'd be so lovely to have you for tea. Like, so stupid.
Yeah. Marion, not everybody is in it for the good reasoning.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is when we get Peggy meeting her father at the park. And we still don't know what the rift is between them. Like, there's a ton of tension though. Like, he wants her to come visit for her mother's birthday. Not to stay, just for her birthday. And so Peggy's like, fine. And they argue about her job as like a secretary for rich white women. And he doesn't approve of her writing. And he's like, you're not going to be successful. There aren't black women writers that are being published. Like, you're going to have a hard time. And of course, this ends up like Peggy's disappointed because he ends up being right in that she has issues later in this.
Well, yeah. And I also think from it, it just sucks because he seems like just a really pessimistic person.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who is a black man in America in the late 1800s. And it's, you know, how many years from the emancipation of slavery? Like, not far, you know, pretty far until anything happens like the way that it happens in like a few, you know, decades. But I think for him, he's probably faced a lot more challenges than she's faced because he's protected her. So she has this idea of how she can be in the world and how she can succeed. And she has all this like, you know, excitement and, you know, ideas that she can be a equal to people. But he knows that that's not really the way it's going to go. And then on top of that, he keeps saying like, you should come work for me. It'll be easier. And we're like, do we know what he does?
I don't think we've been told what he does.
No. But clearly he's well off. They're very well
dressed. That's the other thing that is very important to note is that Peggy Scott's family is well off. And so it's tough
for the time being.
But the problem is it doesn't matter how much money they have. The color of their skin will prohibit them from doing tons of things in this day and age. And it's unfortunate. And that is why he wants her to come back to live with them or to come work for him, because it will just be easier on her rather than like almost belittling herself by being a rich white woman secretary.
Which is like, okay, Peggy, like I'm rooting for Peggy 100%, but also like the secretary position is a great job.
Like, yeah.
You know, and I think that she sees that, you know, as her stepping stone, but like also, you know, I think that she will, you know, she'll be somebody who can, who maybe can make it, but probably will have more challenges than success.
Yeah.
Yeah. Am I the only one that feels as though like Peggy's issue is less about her father and more so about relating to the job, which makes me feel as though it has something to do with somebody at the job, at his place of work?
Yeah.
Because I feel as though if she had a real issue with her father, then she wouldn't have wanted to go and see him.
Why was she in Pennsylvania? We don't know, right? Because her family is
– I think that's where
they live in New York.
Right. Her school is her, there. She just graduated. Yeah.
So I think it made me feel as though like there's something that happened at the job where she previously was, or somebody at the job that makes her feel uncomfortable, because I just feel as though she would not have seen her father.
Yeah.
If that's the issue. I think that there's a point of contention surrounding being a woman of color who writes, and if that's a suitable career for her.
Well, because he says, I can forgive you. And she's like, forgive me. And that's why I'm like, what is going on there? Like, I need more information.
Clearly the stuff with Rakes is about Pennsylvania, because that's the whole reason she needed to talk with him was because
he knew about Pennsylvania. She doesn't want her father finding out.
Well, and he knew about Pennsylvania law.
Right.
That was like the big thing, was she needed a lawyer that wasn't a black lawyer that her father would know, that knew Pennsylvania law. And so she ended up, being able to get that in Rake. So like the whole legal stuff seems separate from the reason that she doesn't like her dad, but it's probably all tied together. Anyway, that's a mystery. We need more info.
I know. I want to know more about Peggy. But we also see at the Russell household, we learn a little bit more, or we kind of get little seeds planted about Mr. Watson, who is like the bald butler who like kind of like right hand man to Mr. Russell.
Oh, Mr. Watson.
Yeah, the bald one.
Right. And not the head butler.
No. So he says he often slips out for an hour in the afternoon. And so the new girl, Mrs. Bruce, is like, oh, where do you go? And he's just like, oh, I go to the park. I just like to walk. And Mrs. Bruce tells the maid who's like obsessed with George that like, oh, I think he likes you. He was like looking at you. And she's just like, I have no time for a broken down valet. Yeah. Like, she's
I love
nasty.
Mrs. Bruce. I think she's great. She's great. Mr. Watson, like this whole thing where they just like drop this quickly, I was so annoyed. I was like, okay, come on. We don't need this. Like, if you're not going to follow through, let's make it, you know, a little bit more thorough. Just like dropping this little nugget that he goes out during the day, like,
and then that's it. Yeah, that's we don't know anymore.
Yeah.
And so so we learn everything about Mrs. Chamberlain, which was very disappointing.
Yes.
And then we get the argument between Mr. and Mrs. Is it Mr. and Mrs. Morris, where they're like having this huge argument about losing all of their money. And it's funny because it's not even just the Morrises. We get
it's the other parallel arguments. What's her name?
There's so many. I'm so sorry, everybody, because there are so many characters.
Say it's Mrs. Morris and this other lady that I can't remember her name, who is
always the two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that started everything with Mrs. Russell, and the one that like is constantly saying like, oh, you to marry
Mrs.
Like,
Bruce. Mrs. Bruce.
No, Mrs. Bruce is the.
Oh, you're right. She is the Mrs. Bauer. Is it Mrs. Bauer?
Who cares? The other one. Yeah. And she basically is talking to her husband, and her husband's freaking out too, because they're both aldermen, and he's like, you're going to ruin this family. Yeah. He says to her, because you snubbed Mrs. Russell. And she's like, no, you're going to ruin this family. Like, we will have nothing left. Yeah. And then Mrs. Morris, this is where Mr. Morris blames her and is the same thing, you know?
Yeah. He's like, you'll have no possessions left. No one left to boss around. So do what you're told, basically. And then we do get the little scene of Jack and Bridget at the picture show. Jack wants to go for ice cream after, and Bridget is like, no, we told Mr. Bannister like we'd be back right after. We can't go anywhere else. Like, we have a curfew. And he wants to hold her hand. She says, I told you already, I don't like that stuff. Definitely more to come on them. I'd say, like, for sure, I think the upstairs is currently just more riveting. There's more going on. I'm more interested in. But I feel like it's because we haven't had a ton of focus on the downstairs folks. So I'm open to being, you know, to learning more about them.
Yeah, I think that it is a little bit they give us like such like little snippets of everything. And then it's like, okay, we got to wait now.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Yep. So this is when Oscar reveals to John like his plans have been dashed for Gladys Russell. Word on the street is Russell is finished. He'll be wiped out in a matter of days.
Literally, nobody cares about you.
Yeah, he's just like, I can't marry without money. I must have more money. It's like, all right, Oscar, like, calm down.
And it's weird because he has like, I don't want to say a fair amount of money, but he's going to get everything of the Van Ryns. Like, Marion and Ada are not getting anything. Like, they're left with no place to live. and no money. Like, they don't
have he's just one of those people that is just money hungry. Like, that's all he hears about is getting more and more and more wealth.
Well, so and that, for him, I mean, it's like, if he marries rich, then the person that he marries is probably not going to be as concerned about his sort of like extracurricular things when you know, they can live a happy sort of well-off life. So I don't know.
So this is when we get Peggy, for her going to her interview, and we find out,
I hated this.
Yeah. They had no idea that she was black, and therefore they make her wait. She has to like sit in the lobby the whole time. And I love her mentioning, she's like, well, you did have a recent article about equal rights, but it's cool. Yes. Of course, like they're not, they don't, what is it? Follow what they preach or whatever.
Yeah. Practice what they preach. What they're a little hypocritical. But they, I mean, the Christian Advocate, her dad even says to her, he's like, the Christian Advocate is going to publish you. And it's, I mean, it is a stretch. Yeah. And we do find out that they didn't know she was black. They said, you didn't say. And she's like, did I need to say?
It's because her name doesn't like indicate anything. No. Right. So like they had no idea. It's really sad. She's going to be, she ends up having to wait all day. Mm-hmm. She finally
She's like, she's fire. She sits back down. She's like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good for her. Good for her.
And when she finally gets to see Mr. Carlton, he did say, he's like, okay, did you really write the stories? You're very talented. I would like to publish one. But like,
how dare you?
Yeah. But we'll have to make adjustments.
Ugh.
Yeah. So they have to make the little black girl a little white girl. The readers won't identify with a girl
they,
that's not
white. They do
white.
Say colored, which is like – something we don't say nowadays, but was a respectable term at the time. Like,
it's at the time it was okay to say, but certainly not now.
No, no.
And so, yeah, he basically, he's upfront with her and he says, if we put that in the story, it would alienate all of our readers in the South.
Well, and he says like, we could pay you a shit ton of money. Mm-hmm. Like we can pay you way more than any black.
Yeah. Will you sell your soul to the devil is basically the question.
I don't know what he was supposed to do. You know, I feel like he's in a rock and a hard place too, and he's being as kind as possible, but
he works for a shitty place, you know.
I thought, I found the line that Peggy says. So the Christian magazine, whatever it's called, wants me to lie. Like I just
the Christian Advocate wants me to lie.
Yeah. It's like, okay, the hypocrisy.
Yes, they do.
And Peggy and her Peggy and Marion have a whole conversation about it. And Marion's like, that's disgraceful.
Yeah.
You know, you'll find an open door somewhere. But meanwhile, before we get into Mr. Rank and Marion, we have my favorite scene of the episode with Mrs. Russell talking to Mrs. Morris. And Mrs. Morris is basically begging Bertha to interfere in George's business. And Mrs. Morris is just like, like in payment for what? Like, why are you asking me this? Do you feel I owe you a debt of gratitude? And I love Bertha just getting up, casually walking over to the door and just saying, life is like a bank account. You can't write a check without making a deposit. And then she like opens the door and she's like, Mrs. Morris will be leaving now. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Tell her.
This is where like I was starting to feel like, you know what? Like George and Bertha are pretty scary. They are really, really scary.
They are because they don't have any inhibitions. They don't have any, you know, and I think this is like the new money of it all. Like they feel like, you know, there's nothing for them to lose because they've come from the bottom and they've worked their way up and they've done it successfully. And now, you know, who's to say they can't do it again? So, yeah, they're vicious.
Yeah. No, they're very scary because they don't care. They'll do what it takes, even if it takes losing all their money again, losing their money and having to build
it
back up.
Which is wild
again.
Because it's like, I can't imagine that it would be that easy to get to that level again. Like George is a player. Like he is like, even Oscar says like, I can't believe George Russell is finished in like such a weird way, but he does say that.
Yeah. Yep. So we get the scene. Sarah, would you love to be proposed to at the Statue of Liberty's arm?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I did like it. I liked the idea of it. I think as though It's really, it's, I don't know if they were there. She says herself, like, we've only met a few times. She's like, well, yes. I knew the second that I met you in my office where
you could tell that he knew. You could tell that he loved her ASAP.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, does he have ulterior motives though?
I hope not. I hope it's like that he doesn't have ulterior motives, but that the situation is going to be so fraught that like it's going to either end in heartbreak or end in, you know, her, you know, moving away from her family and then wanting to be, you know, back with her family. And no, I don't think that he has ulterior motives, but I do think that he's being a little, I don't know, what's the word, like hurrying things along a little too fast.
Yeah, he's rushing her for sure.
Rushing her, yeah. And also, she's wearing the same outfit she wore the last time to meet him, just FYI.
That's interesting.
I definitely got the ick
a little bit. I was like, I don't know. Like,
it just seemed very fast. And I think
how was she to respond? Like, what did he expect her to say yes and throw her arms around him? Like,
yeah, but I do like that he was like fine with the fact that she didn't answer right away. Like, he was like, I'll just keep asking until you say no. At least he said until you say no.
Yes, I was gonna say, I don't love that because there's this idea that like a man can just ask for, you know, what they want until they, you know, get it, even if somebody says no, but he said until you say no.
Yeah. And one of my favorite like little tiny like physical reactions in this episode was when Marion tells Peggy that he proposed and she goes, oh, and she just like brings her hand up to her mouth and like gasp. It was just so sweet and cute. I don't know. I love Peggy. It. It was like so innocent. I don't know. Yeah. I loved it.
Oh my gosh, Peggy's so funny. Peggy's just like, she's always just observing whenever like they're out and about. She's like,
yeah
I saw that.
Or Peggy like sitting on the bench just like keeping an eye on things. It's very funny.
So funny.
And then of course we get the reveal that Mr. Eckhart actually is not in it for the right reasons, all he wanted was Ada's money, but Agnes gives it to him straight. She's just like, listen, I know what you think is gonna happen, but if Ada marries you, she's going to have to move out. And she's, I'm too old to live with a man. And guess what? You're not getting any money. I don't know why you think you would get any money, but there's no money for you to get from Ada.
She has no money.
Yeah. And she had heard this tough is when. Stuff. Yeah. So we find out that it was Agnes's father originally turned down Mr. Eckhart when they were children because Mr. Eckhart was overheard boasting in a bar he was going to marry a meal ticket. And I love that Agnes sends Ada out of the room for this.
She doesn't want her to know.
Yeah.
We're past that. Like, they don't, you know, it's so long ago. Like, Ada doesn't need to be torn apart by this. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be that this thing.
I mean, she's protecting her sister's like feelings, which is, it's pretty nice. And I think that she realizes that she has to be the villain in this situation. It's not the easiest thing.
I do feel like she needs to start being a little bit more honest with Ada because I do think that, you know, there is going to come a time where something's going to happen where Ada's going to be so naive about the situation that she's not going to realize what's happening and it's going to be bad news bears for Ada, you know? So I do think she needs to start being just a snitch more, you know, honest with her about, you know, maybe their past and what has happened because I don't see it ending well.
Agnes just assumes she's going to outlive Ada. So she doesn't, she doesn't you know feel what? The need to.
It's probably
their
true.
Ada's past is so confusing to me because it's like, what have you been doing for the last 50 years? Like, have you just been unmarried? And because we learned that she's only been living with Agnes since her husband died, so only about 10 years. So it's
so what was she doing before
What were you doing before that? Like, where were you living? Like, what were you doing? And like, were you on your own? Like, I'm kind of, I'm extremely curious about like what Ada did before she lived with Agnes.
Well, she said she was in Pennsylvania for a long time. So maybe she was with, you know, like around her brother in their family home or something, you know.
Well, we know that he sold their family home and that was like a big point of contention with them.
So perhaps she was just living in the family home until it was sold and then she came to live with Agnes.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. It's just, it's very interesting. Especially because Ada seems none the wiser. She's like, I don't remember him being rude because he immediately takes off. And she's just like, okay.
I don't remember him needing to go so quickly. Like,
yeah. And then Agnes is just like, well, you pick out dinner tonight. I want to spoil you. And she's like, well, aww. I don't see the reason, but okay. And it's like very, it's very sweet. Then they both like,
and she's like, you'll notice
both like pick the teacup up at the same time and like drink. So you can get, there's like, there is that bond. They seem very different, but they do have that sisterly bond, that protectiveness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we get this, a big scene of the episode with all the aldermen coming to Mr. Russell's office, begging him to stop. Mr. Morris offers to kneel, and then he's like on his knees. He's like, if you want me to beg, I'm begging you now. We've lost so much money. We're facing ruin. And Mr. Morris is crying. He's like, please end it. George is just like, I won't say I feel no pity, because I do, but you snubbed and belittled my wife. And he just like lays it into him. He's like, you must face the music.
Mm-hmm. Which is clearly the nail in the coffin. But I do think at this point, George should be letting it go, because he's gotten what he wanted. He got them to come back. But I just don't think he has it in him. He can't. To win.
Not at this point. Because if he shows mercy this quickly, then he loses all of his like upper hand.
I just wish there was a middle ground.
No. I'm not saying it's the right thing. I'm like, obviously it's terrible, but he can't. If he shows mercy at the first time somebody begs of him, then he's gonna be like, oh, you know, like he's rough, but he shows mercy. Like, it's okay. We can get him next time. So he has to
and he doesn't know.
And he comes home and he's like, you know, I did what I have to do. I think it's over. And now I can let it go. But it's still too late.
Yeah. Yep. Because we are back at the Morris household, where we get the scene we talked about earlier with Mr. Morris telling Mrs. Morris like how proud he is of his family. And like how beautiful she is, how wonderful their children are. He asks if they're coming for dinner. It's not great. We see him go upstairs. He's looking at photos of his wife and his family, and he takes his own life. He shoots himself. Mm-hmm. And we see like his wife kind of like turning at the
shock.
The
She's shock. Like,
Yeah.
I am curious how the Russells are going to react to this news. Yeah. Like, are they going to
affect them?
Yeah. Or are they not? And then I think that's going to be a real tell of like, if these are people that we are rooting for because they are, you know, savvy business people, although morally corrupt, or if they're just like straight evil, we're not supposed to root for them. We're not supposed to like them. That's why I'm saying
they're lawful evil. They have rules. They have like, you know, I think that somebody, I just don't see them caring.
I have a hard time believing that they're going to care. I mean, they might just have the attitude.
I think they're going to think that it was like, that's, you know, that's what he gets.
Yeah. Or like, that's all is fair in business. Like some trope like that. So I'm very curious.
Well, also it's going to strain their already fraught relationships with these old money people, because they're going to blame him. They're going to blame him for ruining Mr. Morris, and not forcing his hand, but being the impetus for him doing this, for completing suicide, you know? I think like we've left off on like such an interesting point. I think
episode 3. It was shocking. I didn't expect to be shocked watching The Gilded Age. I was just like, oh, it'll be a fun episode. We'll learn some more stuff. We'll move forward. But I was like, oh, shit.
I mean, we learned that there's like real
there's
stakes.
Real stakes. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting seeing what the next episode is like. And
I think it's only gotten better. The show has only gotten better, in my opinion. Like, this episode was my favorite. And so I'm looking forward to what next episode has to bring. If I had one nitpick about it, it would be, I thought it was a little difficult to understand all the stock information. And it could just
I had
be
no
me.
Idea. No,
yeah.
No,
like,
I think
they need to appeal to a broader audience, in the sense that not everybody is going to have knowledge of like stocks and bonds and trading and all that.
It's not even stocks and bonds and trading. It's all of that in the context of 1883. Like, I think that it was like, it's such a newer idea and like concept to that time that it, you know, it's, it could have been a little bit of a simpler explanation. You know, we needed somebody saying, this is what we're going to do. This is what's happening. And I think they tried to do it, but it didn't come across.
It didn't work very well for me because I had to do further research to exactly understand.
Maybe we're just dumb.
Also could be true.
Just lazy and dumb.
We're just
left
brainers.
But yeah, I thought this was a really good episode. I look forward to episode 4. I can't wait for it to come out. Angela, thank you so much for joining us for this episode.
Honestly, I was so pumped to talk to you guys. I you know, as soon as I saw you guys had a podcast about this, I was like, immediate download, so ready. You know, and I think that I'm excited to kind of see where it goes and hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah. So tell us what you have going on. I know you and Mr. Mike Bloom, your husband, do some
always asking me to podcast. No, we do have a podcast where we cover some fantasy level stuff. So we have our ongoing coverage of the X-Files, which is we're coming to the end of season 9, which is the first full run of the series. So the finale we're talking about this week, and then we'll probably have only a few more weeks of coverage of the more recent stuff. So check that out if you like the X-Files, or if you don't, whatever. And then we have our coverage of The Witcher, which premiered a few weeks ago on Netflix, and we've covered the whole season now. We're going to be doing a feedback show this week, but other than that, no, that's it. That's all I got. You can hear him 5 million times on, you know, the Robus Podcast Network.
He's around. Recaps.
Is he ever?
He gets around.
He gets around.
Sarah, what about you? What do you have going on? Shoot off your plugs.
Yeah. So, of course, Jessica and I have a podcast together, Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, where we discuss all this 90s content. So we cover Boy Meets World and Dawson's Creek, as well as other 90s movies. We just covered The Cutting Edge.
Oh my God. It was so good.
It was good. I loved it. And then this weekend, we're covering Strictly Ballroom with Sarah Carradine. So we're really, really excited to cover those two movies.
Strictly Ballroom is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Really? So oh, I'm funny. Really excited.
Yeah, neither one of us has seen it.
It's so weird. Get ready for like just a really strange situation.
Yeah. So I'm actually I've loved Baz Luhrmann. Like Moulin Rouge has been one of my favorite movies in my entire life. I've always loved it, but I've never seen Strictly Ballroom. So if you know Baz Luhrmann, then I'm assuming that he has a very stylized film style.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that we'll get a little bit of that. So I'm really looking forward to that movie. Of course, you can find us at Shit 90s Shows, at Shit 90s Pod on Twitter and Instagram, www.shit90spod.com. And then you can find me at Sarah Ferguson.
Amazing. You can always find me here on Posher Recaps over on Community Building, as well as a new podcast I'm putting out with Josh and Ariel called For the After Party, which is a new Apple TV Plus series. It's a murder mystery. That's been tons of fun. We've been binging that. So definitely go check out both of those things. And then, of course, like I said before, you can subscribe to this podcast, PosherRecaps.com/GildedAgeFeed. And if you're so inclined, if you want to chat with us more, become a patron of Posher Recaps at PosherRecaps.com/Patreon. You can join at the $5 level to just get access to all these amazing podcasts. At the $10 level, you get the entire Discord, which is where you can find Sarah and I chatting about the Gilded Age in our own little thread in there. So if that's something you're interested in, PosherRecaps.com/Patreon. We appreciate you all for listening. I can't wait to get into season 1, episode 4 next week. We will talk to you all then. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.